Let me first review a little bit what we did last week, and then conclude or approach a conclusion to our study in Chronicles. We looked at 1 Chronicles 25. That was still David at that point, organizing the musicians. We saw in that section a special emphasis on the prophetic nature of the music. We were told that the groups of singers and musicians prophesied. And we also saw that at least one of the leaders, Heman, was called a seer. And we discussed the possible implications of that kind of language. Certainly didn't explore it in any detail. But we concluded at the very least that just as prophecy can be musical, music can also be prophetic. We also noted that David, throughout 1 Chronicles, is heavily involved in liturgical music. He is a composer of many of the Psalms, but also institutionalized what we have called the Davidic Revolution. He organized the Levitical singers and musicians into divisions. He saw to it that they were trained under high musical standards, and also that there would be a stable repertoire that would continue from generation to generation. We also moved into 2 Chronicles, which has to do with the succeeding generations, beginning with Solomon. And we noted that there was much music in chapter 5. There was much music in bringing the ark to the temple. And that the glory cloud that filled the temple at that point was specifically a response to the music. The glory cloud did not come down when the sacrifices were offered. The glory cloud came down after the musical part was over. And we noted that there were some interesting parallels between 2 Chronicles 5 and what happens in the temple and what happened in Exodus 40 regarding the dedication of the tabernacle. There are many parallels between those two stories, but one significant difference is that while the dedication of the temple is charged with music, evidently the dedication of the tabernacle took place in musical silence. In chapter 6 of 2 Chronicles, we had Solomon's prayer of dedication, which is largely in prose, but we saw that it was concluded with something that looks very much like a poem or even a song, which would be appropriate at that high point emotionally in the service. And furthermore, in 2 Chronicles 7, we had the glory cloud descending yet again after Solomon concluded his prayer. And the people responded to God's glory being manifested in that way by singing. Specifically singing the refrain that David had composed back in 1 Chronicles. And the Levites also responded with musical instruments and with singing. So if it was David's intention to make sure that sacred music continued into the next generation, if liturgical music was to be institutionalized, the fact is that with Solomon that succeeded, very much so. Well, I just have a couple of brief notes to make before we take a closer look at 2 Chronicles 20, just to note more or less in passing, in 2 Chronicles 8, verse 14, We are told that one of the accomplishments of Solomon during his reign, among many, one of his accomplishments is that he ratified the appointment of the Levites for offices of praise. We learn in chapter 9, verse 11, that Solomon had harps and lyres made from algum wood that he had acquired from Hiram, king of Tyre. You probably know him best as the man that supplied the cedar wood for much of the temple. He also provided other kinds of wood that were made into musical instruments. And we see in chapter 15, verse 14, that when the king Asa was coronated, there was music at his oath-taking. There was music at that ceremony. But I'd like to focus more attention on chapter 20 as we move ahead some generations to King Jehoshaphat, another one of the notably good kings of Judah. Just to give a little background, and then we'll read a few verses that are most essential for us. Jehoshaphat learned that there were several kings who had gathered together an army and were marching against Judah, and they were coming through the territory of Edom. Jehaziel, the prophet, was also aware of that invasion, but he had something very unusual to say about it, to say the least. Jehaziel predicted that the enemies that are coming against Judah at this time would be defeated without a single man of Judah having to fight. Much along the lines, say, of the Red Sea, or maybe Jericho, or Gideon's defeat of the Midianites. Something along those lines is about to happen again, says Jehaziel, who is a prophet of the Lord. So let's look at what happened in 2 Chronicles chapter 20. Let's read verses 18 through 23. I'm using the English Standard Version. Then Jehoshaphat bowed his head with his face to the ground, and all Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem fell down before the Lord, worshiping the Lord. And the Levites of the Kohathites and the Korahites stood up to praise the Lord, the God of Israel, with a very loud voice. And they rose early in the morning and went out into the wilderness of Tekoa. And when they went out, Jehoshaphat stood and said, "Hear me, Judah and inhabitants of Jerusalem. Believe in the Lord your God, and you will be established. Believe his prophets, and you will succeed." And when he had taken counsel with the people, he appointed those who were to sing to the Lord and praise him in holy attire, as they went before the army, and say, "Give thanks to the Lord, for his steadfast love endures forever." And when they began to sing and praise, the Lord set an ambush against the men of Ammon, Moab, and Mount Seir, who had come against Judah, so that they were routed. For the men of Ammon and Moab rose up against the inhabitants of Mount Seir, devoting them to destruction. And when they had made an end of the inhabitants of Seir, they all helped to destroy one another. An interesting story for many reasons, but our focus this morning is particularly on the musical aspect of things. We notice, first of all, the presence of the Levitical singers, the sons of Kohath, and including the Korahites, sing praise as Jehoshaphat and all of Judah worship together. And as the chronicler tells us the story, as the chronicler tells us the story, the account of the battle, it is almost as if the song of praise was itself the weapon. The singers, you know, went before the army, and they were singing the same refrain that has become very familiar to us now. By my count, this is the fifth time we have seen this refrain. Again, I think they were probably not singing just that refrain over and over again, but were probably singing psalms, including the one that David had composed. But in any case, they were singing, and the singing has the effect of being a weapon. The Lord set the ambush. He caused the three armies to turn on one another at the same time that the songs were being sung, so that it looks like it's the singing that defeated those enemies. And if you jump ahead a few verses to verse 28, you will see that appropriately, when the victorious army comes back to Jerusalem with news of this signal victory, they came to Jerusalem with harps and lyres and trumpets to the house of God. So music was not just a part of the battle. Music was part of the celebration as well. Now, what will this do for our doctrine of praise, our doctrine of liturgical music, to include this story in our thinking about it? And this is just an open question right now. The fact that music can even be used, at least in this case, as a weapon against God's enemies. At any rate, moving on to chapter 23, we have the story now of a later king, Joash. You remember that Joash came to the throne amid much controversy. His grandmother, Athaliah, had done her best to wipe out the Davidic dynasty. And by God's grace, Joash was spared, was kept in hiding for, I think it was 6 or 7 years, until it was thought that now was the time to announce that he was still alive, and in fact to crown him king instead of the usurper, Athaliah, who had been functionally a queen for about 7 years. So if you turn over to 2 Chronicles 23, just very briefly, we see in verses 12 and 13 that Joash is also associated with music. This is an interesting motif we see in the book of Chronicles, that the good kings are usually associated with music somehow. The bad kings are not. Verse 12, when Athaliah heard the noise of the people running and praising the king, she went into the house of the Lord to the people. And when she looked, there was the king standing by his pillar at the entrance, and the captains and the trumpeters beside the king, and all the people of the land rejoicing and blowing trumpets, and the singers with their musical instruments leading in the celebration. And Athaliah tore her clothes and cried, "Treason, treason." Well, they brought her out, and she was executed, and in fact, Joash becomes the king, and under the influence of the good priest Jehoiada, during the early part of his reign, at least, Joash was a reform-minded king. And we get a clue of that even in today's, in this passage that we read today. The playing of music was sort of a public notice that something is going on here. But more than that, it's the people rejoicing at the restoration of the Davidic dynasty. And maybe even a hint that under Joash, the country will be returning again to the Davidic tradition. That is, the tradition of the scriptures, what we would call orthodoxy. Well, one of the reforms instituted by Joash was posting watchmen for the temple under the direction of the Levitical singers. We see that in verse 18. So their work was not only music, but they were also put in the positions of authority. We move on to Hezekiah next, chapter 29. Hezekiah, another good king of Israel. Let's read of Judah. Let's read verses 25 through 30. Hezekiah undertook, as you know, extensive reforms. You can read those there. They take up several chapters here in Chronicles. But among those reforms, he's coming after King Ahaz, who was really bad. Hezekiah has a lot of work to do. One of those changes that he makes is a restoration of the proper liturgical music. Verse 25, "And he stationed the Levites in the house of the Lord with cymbals, harps, and lyres, according to the commandment of David and of Gad the king's seer and of Nathan the prophet, for the commandment was from the Lord through the prophets. The Levites stood with the instruments of David, and the priests with the trumpets. Then Hezekiah commanded that the burnt offering be offered on the altar. And when the burnt offering began, the song to the Lord began also, and the trumpets, accompanied by the instruments of David, king of Israel. The whole assembly worshipped, and the singers sang, and the trumpeters sounded. All this was continued until the burnt offering was finished. When the offering was finished, the king and all who were present with him bowed themselves and worshipped. And Hezekiah the king and the officials commanded the Levites to sing praises to the Lord with the words of David and of Asaph the seer. And they sang praises with gladness, and they bowed and worshipped." So we see the reform movement taking a musical form here. The Levitical musical instruments, we are assured by the chronicler, are not an innovation. He's very careful to point out that this is all done, this all started back with David, and that David's actions were legitimated by the prophets who told him to do these things. So lest anyone get the wrong idea that Hezekiah is sort of making it up as he goes along, it may have seemed novel to the people at the time who hadn't seen temple worship properly conducted in some time. This is their assurance and our assurance as well, that this is not an innovation. If you want innovations, read about his predecessor, Ahaz. Ahaz makes lots of innovations, which were not, obviously, approved by the Lord. So, this is established by David by means of prophetic revelation. They are returning to an earlier, divinely sanctioned practice. The musical praise takes place during the sacrifices and afterwards, and the chronicler again shows us David's fingerprints all over this, because they use the Psalms of David as well as the Psalms of Asaph in that celebration. And as you know from our Psalter, perhaps some of these Psalms have been preserved in our Psalter, attributed to David and to Asaph. Well, we move on next to a little more on Hezekiah in the next chapter, chapter 30, verses 21 and 22. The people who were of Israel, who were, this is the restoration of the Passover celebration. The people of Israel who were present at Jerusalem kept the feast of unleavened bread 7 days with great gladness. And the Levites and the priests praised the Lord day by day, singing with all their might to the Lord. And Hezekiah spoke encouragingly to all the Levites who showed good skill in the service of the Lord. So they ate the food of the festival for 7 days, sacrificing peace offerings and giving thanks to the Lord, the God of their fathers. So when the Passover was restored, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which comes immediately after it, was also restored. And Hezekiah is careful also to restore the musical celebrations that were a part of it. And I feel that I should mention also, Hezekiah did not stop when he reestablished the Levitical singing. You notice what else he did? He encouraged them in their skill. He encouraged them in their singing. Okay. So remember to thank those who provide us with music, as this is a part of our worship as well. Moving on to chapter 31, we have Hezekiah reestablishing the divisions of the Levites. In chapter 34, we have Josiah now, good King Josiah, the Levites, the musical Levites, are placed again in positions of authority. You can look in verses 12 and 13. These Levites are placed over the manual laborers who worked in the temple. But chapter 35 is where we want to spend a little time in speaking of Josiah. Josiah, arguably one of the best kings Judah ever had. And verse 15, first of all, the singers, the sons of Asaph, were in their place according to the command of David, and Asaph, and Heman, and Jeduthun, the king's seer. And the gatekeepers were at each gate. They did not need to depart from their service, for their brothers, the Levites, prepared for them. So this is Josiah, again, following the pattern of before, making sure that the Levites are in their place and are ready to do the things that they were called to do. Once again, we have one of those musical leaders designated by a prophetic name. He was called a seer, the king's seer, in verse 15. When King Josiah died, that was also the occasion for music, but this time, sadly, the music of lamentation. If you go over to verse 25, after Josiah was killed in the battle against the Egyptians, verse 25, Jeremiah also uttered a lament for Josiah, and all the singing men and singing women have spoken of Josiah in their laments to this day. They made these a rule in Israel, and behold, they are written in the laments. So Josiah was rightly honored as a very good king. Jeremiah, mourning for him in song. The male and female singers, not only themselves mourning, but their lamentation was preserved so that Josiah's name would continue to be remembered among the laments that people made. By the way, this is not the Book of Lamentations. Okay, this is a book of laments that evidently has not survived. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of 2 Chronicles and Chronicles as a whole. Chapter 36 brings us up to the time of Cyrus's decree to rebuild the house of the Lord. You remember that they were taken over by the Babylonians. Jerusalem and the temple were destroyed. Cyrus issued a decree that the exiles would return. And one of the things, in fact, one of the main things they were supposed to do was to rebuild the house of the Lord. By now we should know, because this was one of the chronicler's purposes, by now that we should know that when that new temple was built, among other things, this would be a temple that was filled with music, a temple that was filled with musical praise. Well, let's tie together what we have said about Chronicles and music in the minutes that we have left for us. Next week, my intention is to give a brief overview of what we have seen in the Old Testament regarding music, tying some things together. And then, as time permits, we will resume our study by going into the New Testament now and discovering what we can learn from that. So, reflecting on Chronicles and music, there are three main things I would like us to keep in mind. First of all is the role of David. David, although he did not build the temple, had a critical role in preparing for the building of the temple in various ways. One important way was in his contributions to the musical service in the temple. For example, as the author of almost half of the Psalter, he provided suitable music for public worship. His example was a powerful influence on other writers as a musician, a fellow writer, and as a king. David, early in his reign, began laying the groundwork for the new importance of music and public worship. He did so in his dealings with the Ark of the Covenant. He used music before, during, and after the installation of the ark in that special tent that he had erected in Jerusalem. David was particularly concerned that this musical revolution not be a temporary phenomenon. Like all successful revolutionaries, he institutionalized what the revolution had gained. He transformed the Levitical tabernacle carriers into singers and musicians. He provided for their ongoing maintenance and training at public expense. He organized the singers and musicians into groups and assigned them the times of their performances. Okay, so all that's point one. David is huge in all of this. Secondly, if Chronicles details the close connection between the monarchy, especially David, and the professional musicians, which is Levites and priests, it also at least suggests a close connection between music and the prophetic office as well. So the monarchy, the priesthood, and the prophetic office are in some measure linked by music. Thirdly, and last for today, the rest of Chronicles after David shows that David's institutionalization of the musical revolution was largely successful. While the wicked kings of Judah neglected this along with other divinely appointed institutions, reformed-minded kings, such as we have read about today, reestablished the temple musical tradition.